Welcome back. It is May 23rd, season 2, episode 47. Let Me Be Frank podcast. Brian and Pete here with you. And Justify has justified its place. See what I did there? Let's acknowledge it.
That was like a 3 out of 10.
All right. I'll try better this the rest of the episode. Justify wins the Preakness. Super foggy day, really shitty weather, hard to see. Unimpressive run from the horse who has raced, I believe, 5 or 6 times now in under 100 days of its racing career. And will go in 2 weeks to Belmont, New York to win, to go for the Triple Crown. It would be 2 in 3 years, which after not having one in 37 years? I can't remember how long it was.
Yeah, I just read that. 37 years.
Okay, so 37 years before American Pharoah did it was the last horse to do so. Is it bad for the sport of horse racing if we have a Triple Crown 2 within 3 years?
Is Bob Baffert bad for horse racing?
That's a good question.
Also, another question, is Bob Baffert the greatest horse wingman of all time?
I'd have to think so.
Because if Justify wins this Triple Crown too, he's got two horses that are just getting laid for the rest of their lives.
The money he will make off of the stud fees for American Pharoah and Justify will pay for the next 30 horses he has to buy.
Now, I know we tend to get into these money-making schemes while on the podcast.
We do.
But is a horse not getting a top-quality horse not one of the soundest financial investments we can make?
I think it is. I think it has just been some time coming for us to get to this realization and to put the wheels in motion to do it. Again, we'll probably need some thicker-walleted investors, but hey, we've already put together a pretty darn good pitch for the Houston Rockets, and now buying a horse, that should be easy.
I think we could get a loan from the bank just based off a presentation off of all of our ideas.
That's
true. Knowing that we're idea guys.
Whether or not they're related to horse racing doesn't matter. They'll just be like, you know what? The equity in these guys' brains is worth it.
You can see on slide 3 here, we could have made a lot of money on this one. Next one, also large sums of money.
It's like when you're looking on Google or Yelp at a restaurant and it's got the price and it just is the number of dollar signs. So what you could have made, like potential revenue, is just like $2 signs to $3 signs. It's like, oh, wow, they really could have made a lot with that one.
All our ideas are $3 sign ideas.
At minimum. But yeah, that is how it went. I missed the trifecta by pretty much a nose. The third horse I needed came in fourth, and it was because of a strong late finish. So that one hurts the old wallet, but you live and you learn, and we were up on the day throughout the races, unlike the Kentucky Derby. So we got a little cash to play with for the Belmont.
There you go, moving up.
Exactly. Other than that, any horse racing notes that you'd like to bring up?
No, I wanted to make the comment on Bob Baffert being the horse's greatest wingman, and that was all I really had to say.
He truly is. So keep an eye out. Justify, June 9th is the Belmont. That is the big day. So keep that on your calendars marked. We'll go to the NHL playoffs where Vegas keeps on winning. The house always wins, and they are going to the Stanley Cup final. Gentlemen's sweep of the Winnipeg Jets 4-1. Team's a fucking wagon. I don't know what else to say. They can't stop, won't stop.
Is this going to be the first time that a sports team's home city will be rooting against them because of how much money they stand to lose?
That is a really good point. I don't think we've ever had that in sports history. I will say yes. I will 100% say yes. The pray for the books because they are bleeding here, folks. The casinos, they are losing big time. It is so sad to see. People are losing jobs. That's how much money they're losing.
I can't believe it. I feel so sorry for the books. It's just going to be a real shame if Vegas ends up winning and just putting these guys out of business.
Putting everyone out of business. It's such a sad story.
They have families.
Almost as sad as when Leicester City won, but just almost there. You imagine if those had gone in the same year back-to-back. There may not be any sports gambling anymore.
We need to shut all of our doors.
We're going to shut it down until we can figure out what the hell is going on. But yeah, Vegas in the Cup, that'll be rowdy. Yesterday or 2 days ago, we saw the cheapest tickets for the first game that Vegas would host. We don't know whether it's going to be game one or game three. We're going for just over $650 a seat, which is awesome to see because people obviously give a shit about hockey in Las Vegas, which was the biggest fear of the NHL. But I am of the mindset that this is just setting up the team for failure later, because what happens if they lose in the Cup this year and then are just a team that misses the playoffs for the next four? Where does interest go after that?
Well, I mean, the football team, the football teams are going to take some of that interest at least.
Very good point. They have the Raiders coming to town.
With that first like wave of success, I'm sure they've gotten a grasp on like a hold on a bunch of young fans. So hopefully that'll keep the Vegas interest going. But honestly, I have a legitimate question here.
Yeah.
Do people actually care about hockey in Vegas, or is it just a huge draw for people visiting Vegas to be able to see a good hockey team?
So I think originally, and I was of this mindset, the whole idea of bringing the team to Vegas was it's a destination. People are going to go there if their team is playing there. You know, if they've got a game, or even some teams will even play two games over a weekend, something like that. If they go, you know, if your team's playing there, why wouldn't you go travel to go to Vegas? Spend a couple days. That's the whole point. But I think as the year's gone on and people have seen how good it is, and then obviously watching, you know, high-level hockey and playoff hockey especially is awesome, people are like, oh, shit, this hockey thing is kind of cool. We should totally watch more often. So I think that's kind of what's happening. So it started as a destination place for fans. And how many people are really from Vegas? You know, like how many people are born and bred in Vegas?
6,000, maybe, give or take.
Maybe, exactly. And they're all like seven large families, I'm pretty sure. But for everyone else, Vegas has like 700,000 people, I think. That's a lot of people that are transplants. So if you and I went out there, we'd go see the Hawks player. If people from New York, you know, things like that, where people are from different areas, they're like, I'll totally go see that. So that's probably what it started as. There are obviously some people, I'm sure, who, you know, let's say you were a New York Islanders fan growing up, or someone shitty, maybe the Phoenix Coyotes, something like that, where your team just sucks. All of a sudden, Vegas, you live in Vegas, it's like, oh, this makes sense. Why don't I just become a Vegas fan?
And here's another thing that's different about this team being so good is that one of the main staples that I, in my opinion, of good Hawks teams was the bandwagon fans.
Yeah.
The backlash from hardcore fans on Twitter. How I just want to find that one guy who's like, where were you guys in the first 20 games?
There are definitely guys out there. Like, oh, I was one of the first season ticket holders. You know,
when the new year came around, you guys hopped on.
You guys waited until the entry draft, the expansion draft, to really care about the team. I was a fan before we even had players.
I just want to be able to find those tweets where those guys are grasping at straws to establish that they are not a bandwagon fan and everyone else is.
I'll be honest, I haven't taken a deep dive into Vegas Twitter, but now that you've said it, I'm probably going to over the next couple days. And if I find anything, I'll have to report back.
Thank you.
The other big story, though, in the NHL is Game 7. We get yet another Game 7. Washington has forced the Game 7 winning last night, Monday, as we're recording. So two nights ago, for those of you listening, with a win over Tampa Bay, we'll head back to Florida for Game 7. Florida, the state of hockey. It'll be an interesting one. It's been a really good series so far. But I thought this one was going to be a blowout in favor of the Caps. Tampa Bay rolls off three in a row. All of a sudden, it is no longer the Caps year. Now it still might be. So I don't know what to think of this game. It's the better goalie is going to win the series. And so far, it's gone back and forward between the two.
Yeah, so the Caps, like, getting a shutout in game six gives them some pretty solid momentum to go into for game seven. But I still have a hard time trusting this the Capitals in general.
Because they could so easily go down 2 or 3-0, like in the first 10 minutes of the first period on the road. It is totally not outside of the realm of possibility. You got to feel a little confident since they've won two games already on the road in this series, but still.
I mean, not the first time the Russians have pulled off an unlikely victory at the end.
That's true. That is true. Or I lost my train of thought. But anyways, that is what we're looking for. Winner will take on Vegas in the cup final. I think the NHL is very worried that this is going to be the first warm weather Stanley Cup with Vegas and Tampa playing each other.
First time?
I believe so, yes.
Jesus.
First time since 1969 that neither the Blackhawks nor the Red Wings make the playoffs, and this is what happens. The league goes to shit.
You know what? I feel like the NHL is so picky about the Stanley Cups they want, because then there's like we don't want the Northern Canadian, like the smaller Canadian teams to get one. We don't want a warm weather team. Like, who do you want? Like, just the
original six? That's
yeah, just want the original six every time.
Minus Montreal and Toronto. You want Toronto, but minus Montreal. You want everyone but the Canadians in the original six.
So damn picky.
We'll move on. NBA. LeBron is alive. LeBron is alive, and LeBron is well. It's 2-2.
Yeah. What did you say it was? Did you say gentleman's tweet for the series?
I did.
You said straight sweep for the Warriors, right?
I did.
I mean, wrong. I meant to expect
those around.
No, I'm saying the Warriors are going to. It should be still be able to win in five. But
yeah.
No, LeBron is just, for as good of a coach as Brad Stevens is, LeBron's just overwhelming him, or everyone at least.
It seems like it's finally getting to the point where Boston is missing its star players and it's finally making an impact. Like I feel like they've been getting by because all like a role player too. Obviously Terry Rozier has been the biggest one, but somebody has stepped up huge in each series and made up for the absence of Kyrie and Gordon Hayward. Now all of a sudden, none of those guys can really put it together. And then obviously LeBron is having like the greatest playoffs in the history of the NBA. Scored 44 again last night. Still can't break 50. I don't know what it is with him and 50 points, but he can't do it. And then okay.
Skip Franklin.
No, I'm just pointing it out. You know, it's funny how he can score 40 plus every game, but for whatever reason, he just won't get to 50. And, honestly, who cares? As long as he's winning, it shouldn't matter. But they found a way to get wins. The role players are playing okay for LeBron, and that's really all he needs.
Yeah, and you're right about they're missing their star players right about now, because the true test of superstar players and role players is that how do you react when a team has the time to game plan against you and push you to your weaknesses.
Yeah.
Their scheme is just to push you to your weakest spots on every possession. And how do you react to that? And can you make that consistent game to game and still put up your numbers? And it's apparent that no one on the Celtics really can do that. And LeBron is the best in the world right now and is carrying his team yet again to another NBA Finals.
Yeah, and I think another big thing is obviously when you're a star player, your weaknesses are small. And if they're bigger, you've got so much good in the rest of your game that it totally encapsulates the negative that you have. And that's way different for role players because they're obviously role players for a reason. But another big thing is Boston seems to be settling for way too many jumpers. And I don't think the Cavs are like a physically imposing team specifically in the paint, but for whatever reason, Kyrie is probably the best guard that finishes at the rim in the NBA. And without him, it's just bottling things up for them to take jumpers.
Yeah. There's no one imposing at the rim for the Cavs, but at the same time, the only person who has a chance to finish at the rim right now at a consistent basis is Terry Rozier.
Yeah.
And he's out. No, well, I'll give Tatum and Jaylen Brown a little bit of a nod there, but they're still very young.
They can't do it consistently.
Yeah, they're still also very young.
Yeah.
But yeah, this has completely swung my opinion of the series. I think LeBron has just been imposing his will. But game five, I think, again, the Cavs are so heavily dependent on two of the role players coming through during one of the games or during games that on the road, it's going to be risky if it's just LeBron and just carrying a bag of garbage behind him.
Mm.
Or if Tristan and Kyle Korver / JR / George Hill, if two of those guys can have solid games, I think they have a chance to win in Boston. But if George Hill has another game one like he did and Tristan Thompson can't bottle up Al Horford, I think they're going to have issues.
Yeah, that's for sure. And it's the road team. A road team hasn't won a game yet, so the series hasn't even started. But yep, you got to feel that whoever wins game five is going to win game six, I think.
If Boston wins game five, I think LeBron, well,
it's so hard to bet against LeBron in Cleveland. But if Boston comes out and plays like they did in games one and two, those were dominating, like dominating wins. And LeBron still put up 35 plus in both games. I can't remember what he had in game one, but he was really good still. And his team's lost by 15 and 20 or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I never underestimate the power of a Boston Celtics team behind the power of 20,000 overweight assholes. So
that's true.
Really get someone riled up. But yeah, I honestly have no clue what to expect for the next three games, I should say. It's the same as the first finals between LeBron and the Warriors. It's just LeBron carrying this team,
yeah,
by sheer force of will. Versus the most well-coached team I've seen in a very long time.
Yeah, so that's really the series to watch. I still don't think Golden State Houston is anything exciting or fun to watch. You called it. You said that Houston would get at least one.
Yep,
they did. I agreed, but I think you were more confident in the Rockets. Actually, no, I called for the straight sweep, but. Regardless, I don't believe in Houston whatsoever. I don't believe in James Harden because he doesn't play. He doesn't play a great offensive game, meaning he doesn't get his teammates involved as much as they should. I don't need to explain it. Everyone who watches knows it's isolation. Try and draw a foul. If you can't draw a foul, you're one of the best shooters in the world. You're going to hit the shot. And if it doesn't work, then oh shit, hopefully we can rebound and get an easy bucket. But that doesn't work against Golden State. It just doesn't.
Yeah, and the versatility and switchability and depth of the Warriors has just overwhelmed them. Chris Paul has just been, his leg is obviously bothering him. He doesn't have the first step that he's had during the season. He's small, obviously he's been small, but
Chris
he's just
Paul
getting
hurt in the playoffs? No way.
He's getting guarded by Kevin Looney and just being locked down. And the Warriors aren't afraid to switch onto him. And it's not a glaring mismatch in the slightest, which is how they took advantage in the last two series to get here.
Mm-hmm.
So Chris Paul has effectively been neutralized. And while James Harden is still having a great offensive series, not having the second or third reliable option or even like star option that the Warriors have for scoring. They're just going to bury them. There's no, absolutely no way to keep up with the scoring of the Warriors when they can defend Chris Paul and Eric Gordon.
Yeah.
And not be like, and be fine defending Clint Capella, Trevor Ariza. Like, they're just, the Warriors are a good basketball team, Brian.
Yes. I will agree with that. I think that's a very, very strong take you just put out there. The Warriors are very good. It's very hard to match up with them. While they're not even the most defensively inclined team, they still play pretty good defense.
And when you hit, you can throw out a lineup of, I mean, Klay Thompson is an underrated defender. Draymond Green is obviously one of the best defenders in the NBA. And when you can toss out Andre Iguodala in short spurts and have him give like 100% effort because he doesn't play those long stretches anymore. But
yep,
that's just a defensive trick. And plus Kevin Durant, a sneaky 7 foot tall guy with a 7'9" wingspan who decided to be one of the best shot blockers in the NBA this season. You just can't, like, and Steph's the only like perceived weakness out there. It's unfair.
It is.
Speaking of Steph, it's really pissed me off that they made it into a story that he said fuck one time.
Oh
his
my
mom,
God.
His mom told him to wash out his mouth.
It's so ridiculous.
I'm tired of this all American family BS.
Shut the fuck up, everybody. He said fuck. He's a grown man. He can say what he wants. He makes millions of dollars playing a game. Let him do what he wants, all right?
Mama Curry was not too pleased.
It is his fucking house.
Yeah, yeah, it was his house. And that's scary, too, that he just absolutely went off in the third quarter. And I was like, oh, this is what that looks like.
Yeah, this is what it's like. Aren't they the best third quarter team in the NBA by, like, significant margins?
I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I can tell you from the eye test that that's absolutely true.
I think I might just go on betting Golden State in the third quarter. Like, I'm just going to try and find alternate lines for quarter by quarter and just take the Warriors every time.
And I'm sure Vegas already has factored that in, Brian.
I'm sure they have. We'll figure it out, though. I'll beat them sometime. Any other NBA notes?
No, that's about all I have.
All right. Well, game four is about to start, if it hasn't already, as we're recording this for the Rockets-Warriors. I'll spoil it for you. The Warriors win by 14. Have fun with that. And
Warriors win by 11.
All right. Both agree in double digits. We'll move on to our top five, and it is snacks, sports snacks that you got after games when you were little. So Little League, soccer, whatever it may be. Top five. Pete, if you're ready, let them rip.
All right, so number five, I have pre-cut. Okay, this is specifically pre-cut orange slices because fuck putting in the work to eat an orange.
Yep. You just left your heart and sweat, blood and tears out on that field, and they expect you to peel a goddamn orange? Get out of here.
I'm not digging my dirty nails into a fresh orange. And if a good mother pre-peels that for pre-slices it for all the kids.
Yep. That's a good team mom right there.
Yep. Number four, Rice Krispies. Bonus points if they are homemade.
Oh, yeah.
I see a theme here that I'm just putting a lot of pressure on the mothers to go over the top for snacks. Three, I'm more of a simple man here. I love a good fruit snack.
Good. Good call.
Very basic, but I still have them at work every day.
Yep.
Two, any granola product, granola bars, trail mix.
Great call.
Yeah, they can vary wildly on quality, but I normally trust the, like, if it's like Kirkland brand mix.
For sure.
Can't go wrong. And then number one, Kool-Aid Jammers.
Damn it.
I don't know if they still exist, but the number one, best twist-off cap ever created. The blue, light blue flavor, I still think about it sometimes.
Fuck, those were so good. I had that one too. It was one of those moments where I literally just sat there. I was like, oh, shit. And I remembered my brother had mentioned it. I'm like, holy cow, I totally forgot about those. And then you just get so many memories flooding back to you. You're like, it's probably how I got my first three cavities.
hold the bottle too tight when you twist it off and it just sprays everywhere.
Yep.
I feel like that was the last beverage that was filled too high.
You never see it anymore. Just doesn't happen.
There was no room up in that left in that bottle.
All right. So since you took Kool-Aid Jammers, I'm going to put Capri Suns at number five. Just a classic. You always stab through the pouch and it spills everywhere, but it's one of those.
What about the classic finish your Capri Sun, then blow it back up and ask if you've already drank it?
Yes.
I don't know if that was a me move.
Number four is fruit roll-ups. I feel like this happened all the time, but you just get the generic brand fruit roll up with like the shitty cartoon on it and you peel it off and the one kid would like crumple it up into a ball and just throw it in. And his cheek would look like Ed, Edd n Eddy with the gobstoppers.
Psychopaths roll it up. And then the one with the tattoos you could put on your tongue.
Yep. Number three is mini pretzels. So like the bag of Schneiders or whatever. Just pop those open with a nice Capri Sun or a Kool-Aid Jammer, and that's a good day.
Cannot go wrong with some sodium after a baseball game.
Yes, that is correct. Number two is homemade cookies. So, like, at the end of the year, last game of the season, get some homemade cookies from one of the parents. That's life.
Again, varies wildly depending on the quality, because
that is true.
I don't know if the ones made by my own mother would be welcomed with open arms.
I'm sure they would. I've never had them before, disclaimer, but I'm sure they would.
Actually, no, I'm shitting on my mom for no good reason here. She's a great baker. Cooking, not the strongest suit, but baking is top
She
notch.
Bakes.
Yes.
And number one is high C. So every way to energize pregame, you get your donuts, you get the high C or like some sort of fruit, and you were good to go.
Well, what's your ranking of high C Kool-Aid Jammer, Capri Sun, and Tang?
One is Kool-Aid Jammer, two high C, three Capri Sun, four Tang.
Yeah, all right. I think I agree with that four. Yeah.
Those are our five. Let us know what you guys had. There's always stuff that people eat at games that parents bring. Could vary by region, could vary by state, could vary by anything. Even different parts of Illinois, I'm sure they bring different stuff. So let us know what you guys got at LMBF Sports on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'll move on to our stats. Pete, what do you got?
I have a few here. First being that Donovan Mitchell was one of the kids in the crowd when LeBron made the decision in 2010.
Yes, he was. Fun fact.
So he got to hate LeBron at a young age.
Yes, he did.
Then second one, LeBron has made only $19 million more than Joe Johnson in salary over his career.
I was just talking about Joe Johnson today at work. I was saying that he had to have cleared at least 250 mil from all his contracts.
Like, Joe Johnson,
truly astounding numbers.
Arguably has one of the greatest NBA careers, depending on how you look at it. This man made absurd amounts of money while having no pressure on him.
Yeah.
And has gotten no slack or no flack for not winning anything.
Yeah, Josh Smith got all the flack for that team. And Josh Smith wasn't even the focal point.
Josh Smith later carried the Houston Rockets to a series victory over the Clippers to keep Chris Paul from making the Western Conference Finals.
He did.
And that's all I got.
All right, I have one. It is the complete list in MLB history of players with at least 100 career hits and more home runs than singles. That is Joey Gallo. He has 61 homers and 58 singles.
I knew that was coming.
He is the only player on the list.
Does he have anything other than that? Like what? Does he have like four doubles?
He has very few doubles. I remember reading about it. His stats are almost as exciting as Tony Gwynn's stats, because when you look at like his career averages and all the stuff he does, it's just, why are people paying this guy money? And then you realize he homers a lot and it's like, but still, why are you paying this guy money?
He's just an extreme version of Adam Dunn.
He is. He is. We'll move on to tweets. I just have one. Miles Bridges tweeted out a picture of him and Vince Carter, and it said, met the older version of me today. And Kyle Kuzma quote tweets him and says, don't be delusional, fam, LOL. Which Damn. Is just so mean, but so fucking funny.
Oh, speaking of Kyle Kuzma, my God. Today, Isaiah Thomas commented on one of Kuzma's Instagram posts, and then Kuzma comes back at him just like, yo, shut your little ass up, you Stuart Little looking.
Oh my God.
Oh, I want to see if I can find the exact quote.
The Lakers talk so much shit. Kyle Kuzma and Josh Hart go at it like every day.
So yeah, this is what the interaction was. Kuzma posted some picture. Isaiah Thomas goes, are you going to be posting this dumbass shit all summer? LOL. Kuzma responds, shut your short ass up, Stuart Little.
Oh, my God.
Oh, good.
Kyle Kuzma is a treat. If you don't follow him, you should.
Is that all you got?
Yes.
All right, I got two. This is from Dragonfly Jones. He tweeted after game two, when the Warriors got blown out, Steph Curry is just AC Law with a rich dad, if we're being honest. I was dying at that one. And then the Raptors team account replying, congrats, coach, to Dwayne Casey being named coach of the year finalist.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
That's a rough look.
Man. But yeah, those are good. And as always, we close out the week. What are you looking forward to this weekend?
It's lake season officially this weekend.
Oh, it is.
Lake/pool season.
Yes. I think our pool is actually opening up
this weekend.
I think so.
There we go. Is it clean? Does it look clean?
It looks pretty good, better than usual. So,
is that your handiwork, or is that Tommy or Brian or Matt or what?
No, it just opened. We opened it up. It looked pretty good this year comparatively. So, very exciting stuff.
God bless.
I mean, obviously the long weekend. That's what I'm looking forward to. Memorial Day weekend. Nice chance to kick off the summer here. Probably 50 degree weather as usual, as we've had almost all week. But hey, you live and you learn. Yeah, you can't complain because it is almost summertime and we've still got other sports that aren't baseball. Not that I don't like baseball, but it's just always nice to have something else to talk about.
Yep.
As always, you can find us at letmebefrankblog.com, at LMBF Sports on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. You can look us up Google Play, iTunes, soon Spotify. We're working on it. And leave a review. Let us know what you think, and we'll see you next week.
Pull out your dad's sandals, call somebody sport, and grill some burgers this weekend. Once upon a younger year, when all our shadows disappeared, the animals inside came out to play. Went face to face with all our fears, learned our lessons through the tears, made memories we knew would never fade. One day my father, he told me, son, don't let it slip away. He took me in his arms, I heard him say, when you get older, your wild heart will live for younger days. Think of me if ever you're afraid. He said one day you'll leave this world behind, so live a life you will remember. My father told me when I was just a child, these are the nights to never die. My father told me. Fire they can't put out, carve your name into those shining stars. He said go venture far beyond the shores, don't forsake this life of yours. I'll guide you home no matter where you are. One day my father, he told me, son, don't let it slip away. When I was just a kid, I heard him say,